Welcome to Sauce Secrets, a Vail of Wood podcast where we take you behind the bar and deep into the world of the Texas alcohol manufacturing industry. I'm your host, Clark Smith, partner at Vail of Wood. Each episode, we sit down with the trailblazer behind Texas's favorite drinks to dive into their personal journeys, career-defining moves, and the key business decisions that set them apart. Whether you're an aspiring alcohol entrepreneur or just love a good business success story, you'll get insider knowledge on what it takes to thrive in this competitive industry right here in Texas. So pour yourself a glass and let's uncover the sauce secrets. Welcome back to Sauce Secrets, Vail of Wood's podcast series about the Texas alcohol manufacturing industry. This is Clark Smith. I could not be more excited to be talking to my good friend, longtime mentor, Trey Blocker at Salvation Spirits here in Fredericksburg, Texas, to hear about his background, about Salvation Spirits, where they are, how they've been taking off, and where they're heading. And I want to hand it over to Trey, introduce himself, and to talk about his background and what I'll say, life BSS, before Salvation Spirits. Right. Trey, hand it over to you.
Well, thanks, Clark. It's an honor to be on your podcast. You know, I wish I still had a podcast so I could have you on it, but no quid pro quo here. I'm sorry. I am, by training and trade, a lawyer and a lobbyist, as you know. That's how you and I got to know each other years and years and years ago. Spent law school and my legal career and lobby career in Austin until about 2017, when I decided to sell my house, move to Fredericksburg, go the opposite of what the Beverly Hillbillies did, right? I went the other direction, went from town to country, and bought 40 acres and some longhorns and some chickens and all that kind of stuff. So still have my practice in Austin, but in 2019 decided to found Salvation Spirits.
Tell us what that aha light bulb moment was, and how long in the making was it?
Yeah, so for your listeners all over the world, Fredericksburg, Texas is the second most visited wine region in the country. Most people in Texas don't even realize that. It's second only to Napa. So we have millions of people who come here every year, spend $250 million in tourism, and we have probably close to 100 wineries in the county now. So in 2019, I was with a friend from California sitting at a winery on a beautiful bluebird 70-degree January day, and I was looking around at the demographic of the tourism. Out here, it's largely female, it's younger, it's bachelorette parties, girls' weekends. So this is not the town that it once was, that my grandmother brought me to when I was a kid to pick peaches. It's now a vibrant tourism community. So as I looked around, I thought, somebody needs to build a vodka and gin distillery out here. As you know, the only other legitimate distillery around here is Garrison Brothers, which is about 20 minutes down the road in High, where they make some fabulous bourbon. So I figured if we were making vodka and gin, we weren't going to interfere with his model too much.
Absolutely. And of course, we're good friends with Nancy and Dan Garrison. We've heard their story before, and they've given a fantastic kind of background for that Texas distillery industry. Look, Trey, there is no paint by numbers for a successful alcohol manufacturer. And that's certainly the case in the Texas industry, which has grown by several orders of magnitude just in the last 5 years alone. You've carved out a unique niche that I personally don't know of anybody that's kind of aligned with it, where you have obviously high-end craft off-the-shelf products, but also a consumer experience. Of course, some of y'all in the background, you folks listening might be able to hear that we are, in fact, at a bar. We're in a speakeasy.
Whoa, stop. We are at a tasting room at a distillery. We are not at a bar.
We are at a tasting room at a distillery, and if you were standing outside on the side of Highway 290 and looking, you wouldn't even be able to tell that this was a tasting room at a distillery.
That's right.
A purely unique setup. How did you come to this realization that there was really an opportunity for a customer experience beyond just high-quality gin and vodka?
Sure. So like a lot of people, probably a lot of your listeners, I love to go tour a good brewery. I love to go tour a good distillery. Wineries to me are boring. No offense to all the wineries in Fredericksburg. I like their wine. I just don't want to visit their production facility. But everybody likes looking at copper. and shiny brew houses and things like that, right? But I've always felt like distilleries, you walk into a manufacturing warehouse type of setup, and which is cool, and you get to see all the cool equipment, hear about the process, hear about distillation and what they're distilling and how that works. And then you get ushered into a tasting room that looks like an afterthought, right? It's a little room on the side where you get to taste what they make. You might, maybe 50% of the time, get a cocktail, but 90% of the time, and that's being generous, that cocktail's gonna suck. And so I wanted to do something completely different. So here at the Speakeasy at Salvation Spirits, we set out to create a craft cocktail experience with the best craft cocktails you can get anywhere, comparable to any cocktail you're going to get at any of the best craft cocktail bars in the United States, in the world. But at the same time, so we wanted to be able to showcase our premium brands in that format, right? And give people that elevated experience.
Well, and to that end, I'd say you've succeeded.
Thank you.
Obviously, with every bachelorette party that rolls through Gillespie County, it becomes even more and more the case. Look, there are countless number of startup companies who begin with a fantastic idea and a long-term vision without knowing how to implement it, and that initial threshold is always the most difficult.
Sure.
It's early round funding. Trey, how did you get to the point where you are now to get from 2019 to currently having a fantastically successful on-premise experience and fantastic products, award-winning products, when you have to start from scratch? How did your funding work out right off the bat?
Well, luckily I have a day job, and that day job does pay me a decent amount of money. So I used a lot of my own money as startup cash. And that's, I think, probably the best way to start if you're going to get into this business. The more of your own cash you have and can use, the less of somebody else's cash you need, which means you keep more equity in your own pocket. So I went along as long as I could, just developing the concept, the design, the business plan, product labels, et cetera, branding. And we should talk about that because I think we have fabulous branding. But I used as much of my own money as I could initially and then did what I called a founder's round. And so basically a seed round is what most people would call it. I reached out to family and friends and said, here's what I'm doing. Here's my business plan. Here's my pitch deck. Take a look. Let's talk about it. Help me get this product in a bottle and let's see what it looks like. So that was the initial step.
Well, I think this is a good segue to talk about those products. Now, before we get to the details of your actual brands, product launch with an alcohol brand, an alcohol product, it's not something that you can flip the switch and on day two put bottles of alcohol on somebody's shelves. It takes time.
That's right.
What was that experience like when you got your first product, your first bottles into somebody else's hands? How long did that take? And then how did that feel once you're able to get it done?
Anticlimactic. And that's probably not the answer you were expecting. But let me say this. We opened the Speakeasy in the fall of 2021. So we have tourists from all over the country coming to Fredericksburg. I'd say it's probably 80% from all over the state of Texas, 20% from all over the country. And so to be able to put a cocktail with our spirits in somebody's hands and let them enjoy it, see how much they love it, and then put one of our bottles in their hands and let them walk out with a bottle or two, that's what really meant something to me, because I could see the customer reaction, how much they really enjoyed the experience and creating that moment for them. And so getting into distribution, getting into bars and restaurants, liquor stores, maybe anticlimactic might be too strong of a word, but probably on that level, the best experience for me was going into a high-end restaurant that was carrying our products and making incredible cocktails that they came up with their own recipe. As a distillery, as you know, we can only make cocktails with things that we make here on site. So I can't bring in other spirits to make some fancy cocktail. But when we get product into a good restaurant or a good craft cocktail bar, their mixologists get to be inventive with our product. So that's super exciting, right?
And they get to choose your product the dozens of other options they have.
Hundreds. And so that is super exciting. And to be at a bar and be able to buy customers cocktails made with our spirits and say, hey, that's our vodka, that's our gin, that's our barrel-aged gin, that's the only blackberry gin made in America. That's super fun.
So let's add on to that. So You are, I think, probably one of the few craft distillers in Texas that actually has your products on the bars at some pretty significant high-end bars and restaurants here in Central Texas, elsewhere. Any advice to the startup manufacturer on how to get their products, or what vision to have, get their products on behind the bartender when there are literally hundreds of SKUs that are already there? I know it's an uphill fight.
It is an uphill fight, but I think you got to find your niche, you got to have a vision, and you got to be able to sell that vision. So here at Salvation Spirits, we set out from day one to create premium vodka, premium gin. Like I said, the only blackberry gin made in the United States, one of only two in the entire world, and a barrel-aged gin that'll make you want to give up your whiskey. And so having good products, knowing what your niche is. So when I started out, I knew I didn't want to compete against Tito's. I didn't want to compete against Deep Eddy. Those are products that, in my view, have always aimed their marketing and their products at the middle 60% of the market, whereas I'm looking at and I'm targeting the top 25%. So there's a difference. You got to know where you want to be in the marketplace and then go after it and be able to tell that story. So when I go into a restaurant or a bar, one of the things I say is, look, I'm not here to compete against what's in your well. I'm not here to compete against Tito's. I'm here to compete against the foreign stuff on your top shelf. And so for anybody, especially in Texas, who's proud to be Texan, proud to be an American, wants to buy local, that resonates, right?
Let's hear about the sauce. The show is called Sauce Secrets. You have some of the most interesting, certainly, that are manufactured here in the state of Texas, and definitely some of the most interesting that are on my home bar shelves.
Good to hear.
And I want to brag on you for a moment, and you can dig into the details, but in February of this year, you won the award for the best American craft brandy for your peach brandy at the American Craft Spirits Association, which is a fantastic accomplishment, long overdue.
Thank you.
Tell us about your sauces, product, brand development, process development. I'll hand it over to you.
Sure. So, as I've said, we make the first premium vodka of Texas. And there are a couple reasons for that. One, I will put that vodka up against anybody's vodka. I don't think anybody in Texas, as far as Texas distilleries, have ever set out to make a premium vodka. We have, and I think we've accomplished it. I'll put it up against Grey Goose, Chopin, Belvedere, whatever your top shelf vodka is. I will do a blind taste testing with you, and I'm confident I will convince you to start buying Salvation Spirits vodka. That's one product. The other thing that I'm super proud of is our blackberry gin. So when I decided to start this project, I bought a 10-acre orchard here on Highway 290 in Fredericksburg, which, for those people not familiar with Fredericksburg, this is the main thoroughfare through town. It's where all the wineries are located. So it was a great location. Little did I know I was also getting a 10-acre orchard in the process. So on this 10-acre orchard, there is about 3.5 acres of blackberries. So I wondered, what am I going to do with all these blackberries? And so I got on Mr. Google and figured out that there were only two other blackberry gins in the entire world. One was in London, artificially flavored, clear. That doesn't count. Artificial does not fit into our vocabulary at Salvation Spirits. The only other blackberry gin I found in the world is on Vancouver Island in Canada. And it's legitimate. I reached out to the owner. He said, look, I never plan on selling my product in the U.S., so if you want to come to Vancouver Island, I'll teach you how to make blackberry gin. So I did that, because guess what? Vancouver Island is cool. It doesn't suck.
Victoria is one of the most fascinating cities I've ever been to.
He didn't ask me to go to a bad place, so I went up there. He showed me. So our blackberry gin is unique. It makes an incredible French 75, an incredible martini. And you know what? It's a great golf course sipper. I know you're into golf, Clark.
I'm into terrible golf.
Well, maybe we won't call it golf. It's trying it. Practicing golf, just like practicing law. It's great on the golf course. Now, I didn't mention our barrel-aged gin. So for all you bourbon fans out there, rye fans, whiskey fans, come see me, because I'm going to turn you into a barrel-aged gin fan. So whether it's a Manhattan, a Boulevardier, an Old Fashioned, I promise you, it will be a much more elevated cocktail when you're using our Cairo barrel-aged gin.
Look, this is a fascinating industry. It's a highly evolving industry, highly regulated. That's always in flux. People are always looking for opportunities to get ahead of the curve in terms of regulations. I wanted to ask you this. What's that one issue, regulatory or otherwise, that people in the alcohol industry here in Texas aren't talking about yet that we should be?
There are a lot of things that we can't see around the corner. I think one big issue that spirits makers need to start thinking about is, what are the younger people doing? So when you look at Gen Z and that crowd, they're not drinking, or they're drinking a lot less, or they're looking for low alcohol or non-alcohol options. So as the spirits industry goes, what are you going to do about that? How are you going to react to that? Well, we don't know if, as they get older, are they going to discover craft cocktails and home bartending, and is that going to change? Or do you have to figure out a way to kind of fit them into our spirits culture while respecting their desire to be low alcohol or no alcohol? And that's the question, right? It's a big question.
That NA space, the non-alcohol space, it is growing. It's still less than 1% of the industry, but it was less than 0.1% of the industry 5 years ago.
Yeah, sure, it's growing.
There's different health priorities for the younger generation. We don't know whether that's going to change, how much that's going to change.
True.
And so I certainly think there's opportunities there that haven't been reached.
Yeah, well, look, and if you go back to early 1900s, late 1800s marketing on gin, it's absolutely medicinal in value. Please don't report me to the TTB for making that statement. It's good for you. Juniper's good for you. It's good for the soul.
Final question for you. Our good friends, Nancy and Dan Garrison, We were able to meet with them a while ago, sit down, talk through their experiences, their background. And Dan wanted to make sure that I let you know that you should go fuck yourself.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to pass along to Dan?
Well, look, Dan, I love you. And here's the bad news, Dan Garrison. I love Nancy more. Nancy's awesome. But let me say this in all honesty. And I said this when I accepted the award for the best craft brandy in America at ACSA in February in Denver while I was on the stage. Dan and Nancy Garrison have been really good friends to me, very good mentors, and I can't thank them enough for all that they've done for me as I've gotten this project started, and they've helped me along the way in a big way, and I love them. I love them both.
They're fantastic human beings. They're fantastic Texans. Dan and I were talking, and he thinks he's probably the fourth distillery permit in the state of Texas. I think Tito Beverage with Fifth Generation Distillery is number two. Nobody knows what number one was, something like 60 or 70 years ago. It didn't last long.
Okay.
Number three, I have kind of an idea. I'm not exactly sure, but
well, look, Clark, you were the general counsel of the Alcoholic Beverage Commission. Shouldn't you have this top 10 list memorized?
Don't overestimate my abilities.
One more thing I would like to say about Dan Garrison is he cares about his community. He cares about doing good things. Right now, he's putting together a fundraiser for people who have suffered through the wildfires up in the panhandle of Texas. And that's Dan's heart. He's always doing something great, which is why he has his 501c3 called Good Bourbon for a Good Cause. And so, you know, I took a cue from that when I was getting to know Dan and starting this project. And as you know, Clark, the Archangel Michael is on our vodka bottle. And we take inspiration from the Archangel Michael to contribute 10% of our net profits to charity serving the poor, the powerless, and the hungry. So that's super important to us. We print it on our bottles, so it's not just a short-term sales gimmick, right? It's on the bottles. And then our Cairo, our barrel-aged gin, the mission statement on it's a little different. As it reads on the bottle, we contribute 10% of our net profit from Cairo to organizations combating human trafficking, which to me is one of the most under-discussed, overlooked problems of epidemic proportions in the entire world. And whatever we can do as a spirits company to help fund organizations that are combating that, we're going to do that not just today, but tomorrow and forever, or until the problem's eradicated.
I agree with you there, and I applaud you, and you're right that what the Garrisons have built, the kind of spirit and culture that they've developed over there, but broader than just over in High Texas, within the Texas, not just bourbon community, but the broader distillery community, and what you're building off of that here at Salvation Spirits, it's meaningful. And Trey, it means a lot that you would come meet with us for Sauce Secrets. We look forward to meeting with you again soon. Many cheers, many blessings.
Cheers, brother. Thanks for having me on your show. Love you. Love what you do. Thank you.
Cheers, man.